Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 206, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. If you're just tuning in now because you're used to me on a two, where the hell you been? I've been on for an hour already. On for an hour. Let's go. 888-808-1019. Talking about the Mets, obviously, to start. We'll get to the Yankees in a little bit. The two home runs from Judge, which were relatively meaningless unless, you know, Judge getting back on track is meaningless to you, because it's meaningful to me, I can tell you that right now. So hopefully that can spark him getting back into being the player he was for the, you know, every day of his career and before. I'm not overly worried about it, but it'd be nice to see him starting to swing in the bat. And how good has Jazz Chisholm been? My goodness, he has been everything to this team. Comes through with a huge, huge, should have been double in an era, but a triple that scores three runs. Had another solo home run. He is really playing an excellent brand of baseball. And Marcus Stroman with the big start. Five innings, one run. So we'll get to the Yankees in a little bit, have some thoughts on that, obviously. We'll get to the basketball. We're starting with the Mets because that was as ugly a performance as I'm watching the replay right now. 12th straight game where a starter has not pitched beyond the fifth inning. Like, they just don't go deep. I'm watching that's what ESPN put up as a graphic. And, I mean, they just got pounded. This was an absolute pounding. Like, it wasn't like a couple of walks and then one blast. Like, there were line drives all over the place. It was unbelievable how they got hit around. Unbelievable. Soto had a couple of moments with some bad defense out and right. Nothing went well for this series for the New York Mets. They got absolutely pounded in Pittsburgh. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to your calls on it. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
I've been better.
Yeah, rough one.
I'm gonna steal a line that you said 2 years ago, and to this day, I think it's the funniest thing you ever said.
Okay.
This is from 2023, when the Yankees were on a tough stretch against Colorado and Anaheim, and you came on, you went on a rant, and you said, this team is losing for a myriad of reasons right now, and the number one reason is they stink.
Did I say that? I don't remember.
You said that just like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember that.
And I'm sure I said myriad. There's a guy who just put out a tweet earlier today about that him and his friends, I don't know if this is accurate or not, if he's just playing to my vanity, but him and his friends play McMonagle Bingo with some of the words I say often, and I believe myriad is one of them.
Myriad's up there. And lately it's a hot knife through butter.
I definitely say hot knife through butter, yes.
But I was there Thursday night. I was giddy. I talked to you that night.
Yeah.
I never in my life thought they would do this. But here's the thing about this, the team meeting. We had a team meeting last year, and it was great. But you know why the team meeting worked? Because you had four starting pitchers, and you had Quintana, you had Minaya, you had Peterson, you had Severino, who from June on went out there and took the ball and gave you solid outings. We don't have that now.
No, it's tough to have a team meeting and have it be with – Montas on the mound, he gives up five runs in the first inning. That's tough.
And Stearns has to, listen, I'm a Stearns show, but he has to take some heat for some of these decisions. But at the same time, I think what's really killing this team right now is just the regression of these young players. The Alvarez, the Vientos, the Beatties, that kills teams. That really slows you down. There's nothing you can do about that. And especially these kids, Sproat and Tidwell. These two kids have been in AAA now for a year and a half. They're 24. One of these two kids should be able to come up and take a spot and just hold their head above water. And they're not doing that. That's not on Stearns. I mean, people are throwing a whole blanket over it and killing him for everything. He takes his blame. And you can't go out and get, I love the people, oh, go get Severino, go get Gallant. You know who you could get now? You could get like a Charlie Morton now. That's who you can bring in now. You're not getting Severino or Zach Gallant or Merrill Kelly. You'd have to give up your farm for these guys.
Yeah, and you know, then 100% right, Tommy. And you don't even know if they're designated for being sold. Like, so thank you for the call. Like, right now, you just can't guarantee any of these guys are available. Like, we don't know who's selling. We don't know who's buying. Right now, it's just not going to work. I said it before. Even the teams who are clearly selling are waiting for other teams to designate themselves as buyers. Like, it's just, it's not on the table to do something with impact right now. Yeah, I mean, people point to the Devers trade as if, see, trades happen. That was, like, those trades come out of nowhere every once in a while. Like, they didn't even shop them. They just, like, that's a weird trade to point to and say things move before the deadline. They don't. Not real deadline moves. They just don't. And as far as this rotation, yeah, I mean, and I mentioned that you don't know where the answers are coming from. You mentioned, you know, Sproat and Tidwell. Like, I don't know about Sproat. He hasn't pitched all that well this year. I don't think they want to do it to him, but there's Nolan McLean, who McLean is having a really good is really pitching well in AAA. Tong down in AA is having, you know, a really good season. Could you see some of these guys come up and make a spot start? I think you might have to. I don't know how they feel about that and want to put that on them, but at this point, you are just short arms until Manaea and Senga come back. You might be forced to. You might have to just bring in, you know, bring up one of these guys to make a spot start or stay in the rotation for a month. Like, you just might have to. Because honestly, what is this Met rotation right now? It's Clay Holmes. Like, I don't know. It's Clay Holmes, David Peterson, Montas, Paul Blackburn. I mean, that's the rotation right now. And again, I think they're pushing. They've been, you know, Clay Holmes hasn't really made starts on regular rest. They're trying to push him back, trying to keep those innings down. He's already way above whatever he's already done in his career. I mean, there's concerns about this rotation. I think you might have to go down into the minors and pull up some of these kids and some of these prospects and let them pitch. And I talked about the other thing with the rotation, too, is, like, if you're going to make trades, here's another concern I have about the Mets trade deadline. Not that you can't trade pitching prospects, I guess, but, like, to me, any move you're going to make is a Mets. To bring in anything, to bring in a bat that you might need, which I think they clearly do. The bottom of the lineup stinks. The bottom of the lineup is terrible. And look, I'm not going to get too upset about a three-game set after being injured for a while, but Vientos looked terrible. Vientos had bad at-bats, was 1-for-13 in the series, I believe. It was really bad. And they put him in the two-hole, which I don't know if you would want. I know you're trying to get him fastballs and trying to switch things up. I mean, he's trying to do everything he can, Mendy. But the bottom of the order has been bad. So you're talking about needing a bat, and I know Winker hopefully can come back, but is Winker a guy you look at and point to? Winker and Siri, are these the kind of guys you point to and say, okay, just like, as soon as Winker comes back, this team will take off. Is Winker a savior type player? Or, like, look, he's better. You'd like to have Winker back, but is he someone who's really going to move the needle and change this offense? I don't know. So you're looking for bats. You're probably looking for bullpen arms because, listen, I mean, Razaban was one of the more important relievers they've had all year, and he's awful right now. He's just brutal. He's gas on a fire right now. So you need a bat. You need a bullpen arm. You need at least one bat. You might even be looking into the starting rotation at this point. That's a lot of pieces you got to move. Now, Stearns has a lot of money. The owner has a lot of money. Cohen can go out there and take on bad contracts, and he can do the opposite of what he did with Scherzer and Verlander. He could look to take on more of contracts and give lesser prospects as opposed to trading those guys away and taking back better prospects and eating on more money. Like, it's kind of not the opposite. It's the same because he's taking on more money, but like, give away lesser prospects and take on more money. That's certainly a plausible thing. Like, he could take salary dumps. He's got plenty of money, and I'm sure he's going to do everything he can to chase the championship. But my problem is, if Stearns is going to have this mentality about how to build the rotation, that starting pitchers get hurt, so I'm not investing money in it. And again, we can kill it. Today's an easy day to kill it. Today is an easy day to say, you son of a, real smart, buddy. Real smart. I think I heard someone, you know, call in and say he wants to look like the smartest guy in the room. That's more important than winning games. He wants to build this rotation out of nothing and prove how wonderful he is. I don't think that's it. I think he's been around baseball and he understands that pitchers get hurt. And you don't invest a lot of money. Corbin Burnes for the Diamondbacks is a disaster. Now, Stearns has more money and they make more money, and so you'd be less concerned about having that kind of money on the books while having Tommy John and recuperating. But, like, that's a disastrous contract now for the Diamondbacks. The Mets don't want to sign those type contracts. I get that. I understand that. As important as Max Fried has been for the Yankees, and I'm glad today in the moment they gave him the contract, we're all well aware that contract might be a disaster in 2 years. Like, knock on wood. But you give a guy $8 million and all that money, that's the kind of contract the Mets don't want to sign. They offered Yamamoto a lot of money because he's 26. You want to get a 26-year-old pitcher? Good luck finding them in free agency. That's why I was big on trying to trade for Crochet in the offseason, because you got to get talent in here in some way. You got to have top-end talent if you want to win the championship. Like, if you want to win a World Series, you need top-end talent in your rotation on some level. Now, Sang has given them that a lot of his career here with the Mets, but last year hardly pitched. This year already another injury. Who knows? Can you count on him to stay healthy? I think you can count on him pitching well when he's on the mound, but can you count on him to be on the mound? And no, it's not arm stuff, but still. It's hamstrings. When now he has a tendency of having these soft tissue injuries, it could happen at any moment, and you're gone for months. So you need top-level talent in your rotation if you want to win a World Series. That was my criticism at the beginning of the year, and it's my criticism now, while still admitting that they've gotten it more than I thought they would have, but it scares me that they don't have someone who is just, without question, you know, that guy. And if you have the richest owner in baseball and you're looking to chase championships, you need him, and you should have him. But I understand the downfalls of it, and I understand how smart they're trying to be. And my point is here, if you are not going to go out and find that guy in free agency, because 90%, 95% of starting pitchers who hit free agency are after 30. So if you don't want to give big-time money and long-term contracts, which is what it takes to sign them, for guys over 30, fine. Then you better be willing to give Yamamoto big money when 25-year-old free agents hit, and you better be willing to go trade for Garrett Crochet if you can, because you need that. And then the other thing about that is, though, you're also going to need to develop from within. Like, you can't be out there trading Sproat. You can't be out there trading McClain. You can't be out there, you know, trading Tong, because you need some of these guys to hit to build a rotation, because you're not going to put money into the rotation. So unless you're trading those guys for legit controllable starting pitchers, it's tough to move them. It's tough to move your pitching prospects because you're hoping they build you a rotation, because you don't want to spend money in the rotation. You don't want to give bad contracts to older pitchers. So where do you find pitching? On the edges. The diamonds in the roughs, trying to find Aladdin out there. I get it. And it's worked so far. But it's a dangerous way to go about it, and it's difficult to be successful all the time. It's difficult to be right. And you're also finding out that average pitchers get hurt too. And sure, it's not crippling them because it's short-term contracts, and sure, it's not killing them because it's not a lot of money, but it's hurting the product at the moment. It's not making it easier to win a championship with this rotation. Yeah, it's easy to pivot. Oh, you lost Griffin Canning? No big deal. He wasn't making much money. His contract's up at the end of the year. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't set the franchise back the way a Corbin Burns getting hurt would, or the way a Max Fried getting hurt would. I get it. But it hurts the 2025 New York Mets.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And again, so to me, you're going into this free agent, you're going into the trade deadline, possibly needing a starter. I mean, and I'm using the word possibly very loosely, because I mean, I don't know when Senga's going to get back, maybe even after the deadline, so you can't even count on that, although I'm sure they're going to, because they don't have a choice. Manaea's going to come back, hopefully before the deadline, and throw a little bit, but you need a starting pitcher in the trade deadline, you need bats in the trading deadline, and you need a reliever at the trade deadline. How are you going to do that without trading pitching prospects? And again, it's scary to trade pitching prospects when you want to handle the rotation the way David Stearns wants to handle it, which I agree is smart, and if you can accomplish it, it's the best way to build a team. I don't think there's any doubt. If you are good enough at what you do to build a rotation on developing through your farm system and, you know, maybe the odd very young, controllable starting pitcher via trade or free agency, if you're lucky enough to find that guy, and then finding pieces on the edge, finding veteran pitchers that you feel can you can rejuvenate them for a year or two, or like Manaea and Severino and whatever else, or the Griffin Cannings of the world, a young top prospect at one point, top draft pick at one point, but floundering in an organization that has done nothing but have starting pitchers who floundered. Like, if you feel like you see something in him and you want to bring him in, transition relievers into starters, all the things this team has done over the last 2 years. If you can be successful at it, not putting money into the rotation, finding it year after year, putting all of your money in big-time superstar free agents like Juan Soto or maybe Kyle Tucker or whomever else hits free agency at that time, and you build an offense, an everyday player that you know is going to impact the team every day and more likely to stay healthy. You want to give him long-term contracts, sign a big lineup, have all of your money invested there, and be very smart with the pitching and get enough out of it. That's probably the most successful way to build a team. But when you look at this year's Met team, specifically, it's failing them right now because the rotation isn't good enough. You don't trust the guys who are hanging on. Half the rotation's been hurt anyway without spending money on it and without having top talent. The injuries still come. And the lineup, despite adding Juan Soto to the team, is not scoring runs and not hitting in runs in the scoring position. So, I mean, everything about their design to build the franchise is failing them at the moment. It was a wild success for the first 70 games or so, even though the offense really wasn't doing anything even then. But now it is starting to fail them in every way. They are not good at anything right now. And I don't see answers unless you're looking at pitchers in the minor leagues like McLean and Tong, who's in Double A. The Mets are in a way, but they have to figure out a way out of it. And they certainly need Manaea. Now, I haven't heard anything since the last report was like 4 or 5 days ago with the loose body in his elbow. He had the injection and he said he threw a bullpen and felt fine. So I got to double check. I haven't seen whether or not he's going to make his next rehab start or where and when it's going to be, but hopefully he's a week and a half away at the max. And hopefully Sang is back by the end of July. And they got to go out there and make moves, and they can't trade starting pitching to do it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Quick break. We'll get into the Yankees as well as the Knicks and have a little fun. Maybe, you know, a little bit more upbeat. And not that the Yankees deserve that much more upbeat. They did win a series. They did win two of their last three. So you feel a little bit better about that. And three of their last four, if you count the last game against Cincinnati. But still, an offensive explosion yesterday. But only three runs in the Friday night game, which I was at for firework night with the boys. Still only three runs in that game. Good starting pitching from Warren, who deserves a lot of credit. I talked about it on Saturday. An ugly game that, thankfully, I didn't get to watch all that much of on Saturday, where they got beat up and one of the more dumb plays I've ever seen a catcher make in my life. And there's a conversation we got to have around two out of three. Now, we'll talk about this later, but is Ben Rice the new backup catcher? Is Ben Rice the new starting catcher?
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
All right, 2:30. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Taking your calls until 5 a.m. in the warm-up show. We got Alex on the other side doing a lot of baseball here to start. We got the Mets debacle that was this weekend. And we do get the Yankees, who got a much-needed win on Sunday. That was a win that they desperately needed. You could not lose that series to the A's, who have struggled. Who are, the last time they saw the A's were playing much better. And the Yankees took care of them. They've really struggled since. And Severino coming into this game talking about, you know, hating to play in that ballpark. I think it's wearing on them playing in Sacramento in the minor league ballpark. They've got some guys who can hit. But for the most part, that's the series you have to win at home. And with the way the Yankees are struggling, the way Tampa Bay has been on their tails, that was a series you have to win. And it was scary. Friday night, I talked about it on Saturday. I was at the game Friday night. And Will Warren did a great job. I thought, and I know it's against the A's, as I just told you, they're not a very good team. But to have that first inning where you have the bases loaded, you walk three guys in that inning, you throw upwards of 30 pitches in that first inning. If you give up a hit there and start the series that way, that's a rough start to that a must-win series for the New York Yankees, who are struggling offensively. Instead, he battles through it, gets out of it, gets Gio Urshela, the happy fella, looking, which Will Warren now leads, I think, Major League Baseball. Not just rookies, who he leads in strikeouts, but he leads all of Major League Baseball in caught-looking strikeouts. And from that moment on, Will Warren settles in, gets seven strikeouts, and gives them five scoreless innings. Those are the kind of performances you want to see from rookies. That's what I was hoping for against the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers are a much better team, no doubt, obviously. And he fell apart. He couldn't get out of that second inning. He got lit up in the first inning. But to have a young starting pitcher, who we've seen the best pitchers in baseball struggle to start games, it's a cliche. You're going to get to a pitch, you got to get to him early. He was terrible in the first inning, really battled through, and got them five scoreless innings, and he is becoming a huge part of this rotation. There's no doubt about it. As Luis Gil is coming back, the Yankees might have another Rookie of the Year candidate on their hands with Will Warren. He has been really, really good. And to settle in, give that team a chance to score the measly three runs they scored Friday night on a couple of ground ball singles and a solo home run from Jazz, and we're going to get to that in a second. Will Warren was really good. Obviously, Clark Schmidt broke, I believe, the franchise record for the most scoreless innings before that game fell apart on Saturday. Let's not even talk about Saturday and how ugly that game was. And we'll get to it when we talk about Ben Rice and the catching. with a very disappointing performance. Wells has been terrible. But that was a good win on Friday night. Ugly win on Saturday, lose 7-0. And I didn't watch much of it because I had one of those typical things. I'm at a family birthday party. And, you know, we're at the pool. And I figure that's okay. We're going to go. I got to go to the pool, take it to the kids, blah, blah, blah. I watch all these games. I'll watch it later. I'll DVR it. I'll watch it later. No, not a lot of big sports fans at the party with the family. I mean, you know, they'll ask me about me and stuff, but they won't get into sports. I'm okay. I'll make it through. Make it through the whole day. We're getting up to leave. I say goodbye to my cousin, who happens to be an Oakland A's fan, of course, of all things, although they're not the Oakland A's anymore. One of those weird guys. He's my cousin Joe, his fandom is all over the place. I think I've talked about this before because I don't understand it. He is literally all over the place with his fandom. He is an A's fan in baseball. He is a Vikings fan in football. He is a Detroit Pistons fan in basketball. And he is a Washington Capitals fan in hockey.
And he's probably from Texas or something.
No, he's from New York. No, he's from New York. Went to New Hyde Park, Long Island, just like me. Again, A's, Vikings, Capitals, Pistons. How does that happen? Like, there's always that, you root for one team. Like, I have a couple of friends, and I talk about this too. A lot of people I know are Dolphins fans. For some reason, there's a lot of Dolphins fans. So I have a couple of buddies. Two of the three named Christian, which is weird. But they're Dolphins fans. But they're New York everything else. So you have the odd, you know, I fell in love with this player. So I'm like, you know, I grew up loving Ken Griffey Jr., so I'm a Mariners fan. But I'm pretty much everything else New York. They'd just be all over the map. Washington, California, obviously with the A's, Detroit, like weird, Minnesota, just weird. But anyway, I'm getting up to leave, getting the kids ready, packing the pool stuff because they have a pool, so we're in the pool a lot, packing up all the stuff, getting ready to go, blah, blah, blah. We were possibly going to go to a fair or something that night. I got a million things going through my head. I'm like, all right, later, Joe. She's like, yeah, later. He's like, well, at least the A's kicked their ass today. I'm like, what? You did not just say that to me as I'm walking out the door. He's like, yeah, 7-0. I'm like, oh, my God. He's like, sorry about the A's. Can't beat them up every night. Or that's something like that. I was like, what? Seriously? He's like, yeah, 7-0. You didn't say it? I'm like, no. I DVR the games, Joe. I'm neurotic. Don't you know this? Don't just be never. If you see me on the street and you want to come up to me, thank you. It's very kind of you. I appreciate it. I was at Yankee Stadium. It was nice to see, you know, fans. I was at the Hard Rock. Guy was talking to me online. It was great to talk to him. He's a good dude. Bought me a beer and everything. People are great. Wonderful. Come up to me. Say hello. I get a real kick out of it. I appreciate anybody who listens and is a fan of the show. But if you come up and talk to me, do not give me scores of anything. I don't care what it is. That you have no idea what I might be DVRing and watching later. Please, if you see me, unless I'm at the game, do not reference the Yankees. Do not reference the Giants. You have no idea what I'm doing. So please, say hello. Say you love the show. Say you hate me. Call me fat. I don't care. But do not mention scores. And my family should know better. So I got, tough one with the 7-0. I'm like, so I only went back and watched some of the highlights and saw that ridiculous pop-up bunt. I don't even want to get into it. But then going into yesterday, I mean, we can because it was despicable. Ugly game on Saturday. So heading in with Marcus Stroman into Sunday against Luis Severino, who has pitched much better on the road and is obviously very familiar with the mound at Yankee Stadium, who's pitched much better on the road than he has at home in Sacramento, and he makes no qualms about telling you that he pitches better on the road and that it's a joke of a ballpark and he hates pitching there. So coming into that pitching matchup, I think every Yankee fan was a little bit trepidatious, to say the least, on what to expect. And Marcus Stroman came out and pitched as well a game as Marcus Stroman is capable of pitching these days. To go five innings of one run, and really, to be fair to him, the one run is with a big lead, and he doesn't want to walk anybody. I applaud that run. I am happy he gave up that run. That's what pitchers should do with big leads. Don't walk him. He's had two home runs all year. You throw a fastball down the middle, and if he hits it out, he hits it out. We're up five runs. So on a different day with a different score, he might not even give up that one run because he caved in and gave in to a guy who doesn't hit home runs with a 5-0 lead. And by the way, bravo, because we see Brubaker come in late in the game with a 10-1 score, and he can't throw a damn strike. But the New York Yankees get an excellent pitching performance from Marcus Stroman, who clearly right now is in the rotation, and quite honestly, we're going to see what Luis Gil is, obviously, when he comes back, but you might not have seen the last of Marcus Stroman for the last month, and I've been talking about this, so we can get into it. I think they want to showcase him. Not only was yesterday a big-time performance for Marcus Stroman and the New York Yankees to get a victory, but I think you could argue, and I talked about this on Saturday, Marcus Stroman could have more value than you think in the trade market. And I know they couldn't offload him in the offseason because he had an innings limit attached to him. If he pitched 140 innings this season, next year's contract for $18 million would automatically be triggered. Nobody would trade for Marcus Stroman knowing that, well, because if you trade for Marcus Stroman, the whole point is to use him as an innings eater. So if you trade for Marcus Stroman and you can't throw him 140 because God knows you don't want to pay him $18 million next year, there's really no value. It hurt his value a lot. And now that's off the books because he's been hurt so much. There's no way in hell he's hitting that innings quota. So the contract for next year is off the books. And if you're right now, who knows what the starting pitching market looks like? And Marcus Stroman is a veteran pitcher in this league. Marcus Stroman was excellent in the first half last year with the Yankees, and 2 years ago was in the Cy Young conversation in the first half of the season with the Cubs. He can give you a pretty good second half of the season. The Yankees don't necessarily need it from him because Luis Gil is coming back, and they're looking to make trades to impact the offense, which they need at the infield position, because I think we're seeing that DJ LeMahieu is not going to be the answer. Big shocker. They're going to need arms in the back of the bullpen. They're going to need a little bit of help. And we all know, whether we like it or not, and we can scream about it or not, Steinbrenner doesn't want to spend much more money and go over the luxury cap. And at $18 million for Marcus Stroman, you prorate it. That's $8 million that they could offload to a team looking to improve the back end of their rotation. Even if they eat half of it, $4 million. You're not going to have to, you know, you're probably not going to get prospects back, but you get the money off. And it might help offset some of the money you want to bring on in trades. So not only did he pitch well and help the Yankees get a win they desperately needed, but hopefully if they can give him a run here for a month until Luis Gil comes back, and it sounds like that won't happen until after the All-Star break, you might be able to show enough of Marcus Stroman to be able to move him. And the other thing about the Yankees in this game is obviously Jazz Chisholm. Listen, the offense breaks out in a bunch of different ways, right? Bellinger has the big home run. They score a ton of runs. Judge with two home runs, we'll get to that as well, because I do think they're important despite the fact that they weren't impactful in this game and weren't necessary. But how good has Jazz Chisholm been? He played a good third base in this game. It's been a little bit of an issue for him this year. There's no doubt, especially throwing. He had a tough hop in the Friday night game that a good, really good defensive third baseman just eats up. He's not that right now. And I think there's a real conversation about how long do you let him play third? Do we eventually move him over the second when we realize DJ's not the guy, or they're able to make a trade for someone who can play third base? But right now, offensively, we are seeing the best version of Jazz Chisholm. We are seeing a guy that was brought over here from the Marlins with all the promise in the world of what kind of athlete he is and what kind of player he is. And it wasn't really, after a good couple of years at the beginning of his career, it really wasn't translating in Miami. And he comes here, and last year was pretty damn good, got injured, but was pretty damn good, didn't do much in the postseason, really didn't. And this year was off to a power start, but other than that, the strikeouts, the low batting average, was not the kind of player you were hoping for. But now, since returning from the injury, and whether it's the 70% swing or feeling like himself or the idea that he plays for the best manager in baseball in his mind, Aaron Boone, the best part about being a Yankee, the best part about being a Yankee for Jazz Chisholm is his skipper, Aaron Boone. Just thought I'd throw that out there. But what we're seeing from him right now is a guy who is carrying this team offensively. That bases clearing triple is about as big a hit with runners in scoring position they've had in 2 weeks. They have yet to have that breakout. They've struggled even getting one across, but they've occasionally put a sacrifice fly, or we saw on Friday night a single off the pitcher's hand. Like, that's it. And even on the singles with if you've noticed, even on the singles that scored runs, it feels like it's bullets right at outfielders, and you can't get the runner in from second. Like, it's just amazing how they've struggled scoring runs. And I'm not trying to make it seem like they've been hampered by bad luck. There's been a little bit of that, but they just haven't hit. They've been terrible. Bad at bats, bad situational hitting, no doubt, the whole nine, awful. That bases clearing triple was as big a hit they've had with runners in scoring position, particularly bases loaded, in forever. And it gave them some breathing room. He had the home run earlier in the game. I mean, he had the first four runs of this game that really break open the game and make you an impact winning that game as big as anything else that happened. All to Jazz. He has been unbelievable for the Yankees since returning from injury. He's been everything you could have asked for. He's been clutch. He's hit home runs. He's come through in big situations. He's been carrying this offense through a real downturn. He has been important, and now you look at him, he's got another year. He's got his third year of arbitration next year, and then he's a free agent. He'll be a free agent at 29 years old. There's a chance Jazz Chisholm is earning himself a spot with the Yankees for a long time. He seems happy here. He loves playing for the manager. He's resurrecting his career. He's been unbelievable. On the base paths, he was dealing with a little bit of a groin injury, so the running on the bases has slowed. But once that picks up, he's aggressive on the base paths. He brings a lot to the table. He brings speed. He brings power. He brings defensive flexibility in the infield. He could also play center field. The first game he ever played for the Yankees was in center. Like, he could play outfield. He could play third base. He could play second base. He hit home runs. He can steal bases. Right now, he's coming through with clutch hits. Like, Jazz has been an incredible baseball player for the Yankees. And despite some of this losing, and don't get me wrong, it's been ugly. And we're seeing really downturns from Goldschmidt. We know what's going on with Volpe. Wells has been a disaster for a month. Like, we're seeing a lot of negative things with this Yankee lineup. But the one thing I'll say is, and as we talk about how much Dominguez plays and all this, when you look at this team, the one difference is, and why I'm a little bit more, you know, bullish on this offense than a lot of people are, and why I feel even differently about it than last year, even though they had Juan Soto. Like, they still have the best run differential in all of baseball. They still have scored, I believe now they have scored more runs than Detroit. I think they have the most runs scored in the American League. I'll double check that, but it's either first or right behind Detroit by a run or two. But I think after today they overtook Detroit. And they have game. They do, believe it or not, it's been a struggle for a month, but they have guys who are gamers, and they have guys who bring different elements and speed and defense. Like, Bellinger is a great overall ball player, right? He's not. He's got an OPS right around 800. He's not having a monster season. He's not going to win MVP. But the dude can play center field, left field with a gold glove. He's good enough to play first base, too, if they need it. He runs really well on the bases. He goes first to third a lot. He can steal a base as well. He's got power. Like, he could just do a little bit of everything. Jazz is like that. I think, hopefully, the thought is Dominguez can be that. We see them beat out double play ground balls. Like, when you watch them play, when they're performing well, like they did for the first 70 games, and as they do now, they're explosive. They already have more 10-run games than they had last year, and they're tied for the most in baseball. They've had more 5-run innings than they had all of last year and lead Major League Baseball. They're explosive, and they can do different things. It's not just about power, but it is power. It's speed. But right now, as of late, terrible with runners in scoring position. And just overall, not getting on base enough. And even the performance Saturday was a lackluster offensive performance. So they've got to get it consistent. But you see the elements that should make them better at the issues we have. And that's what's been frustrating about this stretch. Because I felt like the Yankees are better at a lot of the things that are killing them right now and killed them last year and killed them the year before. Like, I do think they're better at it. I think they're a better defensive team. I think they're better on the base paths. I think they're better with manufacturing runs. They were at the start of the year. Again, runners in scoring position, the second best in May, the fourth best in April, lead the league in sacrifice flies. Like, they've been better at these things. But for whatever reason, the last 2.5 weeks, they've been awful at it, at every one of those things. And I am not by any means telling you they're out of it. They won a series against Baltimore too, and went right into stinkers against Cincinnati. There's a big series coming up against Toronto. Toronto's a couple games back. Now, I think the Blue Jays are frauds and always will, but until they prove me wrong, but they're 3 games up on Toronto. That's it. They're going in for a 4-game set into Toronto. These are big games, and they have got to carry this momentum on what they got. Now, they're going to have good pitching matchups. Like, this is a series the Yankees need to, at the bare minimum, split. At the bare minimum, you go in for a 4-game set on the road, divisional opponent, you must get a split. They can be no worse than maintaining a 3-game lead over the Toronto Blue Jays. You'd love to go in there and take 3 or 4. The way they're playing, I can't count on it. And I just feel like that's what you're looking for from the New York Yankees. And we still got to get to the Ben Rice conversation, as he caught 2 out of 3 games. Now, when we talked about how they were going to have to rotate pieces around, and clearly Stanton, after what I thought were a great couple of games when he first came back, and he looked locked in and was hitting the ball hard. It was on the ground, but he was hitting the ball hard. We're still yet to see a homer from him. We're having more and more bad at-bats. He's having his typical comeback from injury and take forever. But you still got to play him all the time. You just have to, because you got to have him ready for the postseason. I'm sorry, you just have to. So you got to give him some at-bats. He's too good in the postseason to just forget him. And I don't care that he clogs up the lineup and makes things difficult. I don't care. He's too good in the postseason, and that's all that matters with this team. But as we were talking about how we're going to juggle these guys around, how are you going to get everybody at-bats, how are you going to get Dominguez at-bats, how are you going to get Rice at-bats, Bellinger, Goldschmidt, all of the whole nine, Grisham. And we all knew that, obviously, Ben Rice had come up a catcher, has still caught throughout, you know, still working on catching every day, and that they could put him in at catcher at some point. I got to be honest. I didn't think we would see all year, unless there was an injury to Wells. I didn't think we would see all year him catch 2 out of 3. Ben Rice just caught 2 games in this series. They are much more confident about his catching skills than we thought. And starting pitchers gave up 1 run in 10 innings with him behind the plate. 1 run in 10 innings. That's how good the starting pitching was in the 2 games he caught. So he's working with the pitcher well, catching a good game. He's obviously a better offensive player than Wells. At least right now, this season, I don't think you can't even argue it. It's not a discussion. And he just caught 2 out of 3. I thought they might mix him in once a week, once every 8 games or so, just to keep him in the mix. DH, first base, a catching game here or there. He caught 2 out of 3. If I'm Wells, I think that's a message to Wells. That's how I would take it. If I'm Wells, I'm like, geez, Ben Rice caught 2 games this series? Now, I know Ascara was having a child and everything, but the idea that they have the confidence to do that, I think that speaks volumes into what they feel about Rice and what they feel about Wells right now, who is absolutely struggling. And I think you could argue he's, of all the bad at-bats with runners in scoring position, with all the bad at-bats when it's time to manufacture runs, nobody has worse at-bats. Even Anthony Volpe, who we like to pick on, right now in the last 2 or 3 weeks, nobody has more consistently bad at-bats in good professional hitting situations than Wells has had. He just has. So if they're willing to catch Ben Rice 2 out of 3, I wonder how much they're willing to catch him. And even moving forward, could Ben Rice be the catcher for this team? Is that a plausible possibility where Ben Rice, now it impacts your offense, there's no doubt about it, you get beat up behind the plate. I don't know if they want to put him back there as and be a starting catcher, like long-term starting catcher. But it's at least in it's at least open to interpretation here whether or not they're willing to do that. 888-808-1019. So a little bit of Yankee talk mixed in. Obviously, a lot of Mets off that miserable series out in Pittsburgh. Let's get to the calls right now. Jeff in Florida. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Jeff. What's up?
Yeah, not much. Yeah, so on the Mets, as a fan, obviously, a little disappointing. You know, I think as they said it was incredibly, considering their 62 season, a few of their earlier years, the most lopsided three-game series they've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's, in some ways, it's not, you know, you lose 3-1 run games or blow 2 or 3 saves, and if anything, that's worse. Obviously, it's just a matter of,
well, yeah, I mean, it's worse. Yeah, I mean, what do you mean? It's worse to blow a couple games, like just for you, the fan, or because I don't know how much. I mean, they got their ass kicked in Pittsburgh. That's pretty rough for the team. Like, you could sell your, like, if Diaz, for whatever reason, who's having a great year, blows a game, you could tell yourself, hey, we had that game won. You know, you're going to count on one hand the amount of times Diaz is going to cost us a game. But they went into Pittsburgh and got outscored 30-4. They got their ass kicked by one of the worst teams in the sport.
Right. No, but I mean is that they didn't really use the high-level relievers. It wasn't anything that they blew similar. You know, again, it all happens in a matter of what they do this upcoming series against Milwaukee and then the following 3 series against American League teams.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking with you, when Philadelphia went into Pittsburgh, got swept a few
that is true.
Weeks ago. The Giants, who were a competitor, got swept by Miami and then lost 2 of 3 to the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Miami went 6-0 on a West Coast trip. They're half game behind Atlanta for the record. You know, if people that think Atlanta's going to make a run or whatever, I don't know. Maybe they could, but you know, that's how.
No, and they lose 2 out of 3 to Philadelphia. Really? So
yeah,
I don't. Right now they're 10.5 back of Philly. They're 7 games under .500. I would not anticipate a Braves run unless they play the Mets every day.
Yeah, all of the Mets did win those 2 games.
They did, and that's what's frustrating, man. I'm really frustrated that that's the performance you got after those 2 games.
Yeah, but again, I think, and honestly, I could see the Mets-Yankees series be a turning point, you know, almost similar to 99, as I mentioned to actually Evan Roberts on X, so maybe mm-hmm. using his podcast. But anyway, that if you remember 99, obviously, you know what the Yankees did, you know, the Mets were fired 3 of their coaches after losing the first 2 at Yankee Stadium.
Yep.
Early June, and basically went 40 games over just to make game 163.
Mm-hmm.
My point is that they, you know, maybe this is rock bottom, maybe a few days here they'll be rock bottom, but the point is they were in much better shape right now than they were last year. But at the same time, it's crazy how bunched up the American National League is. They're a game and a half outside of the 2 seed, and they're a game.
Yeah, they're 2 games out of the playoffs. Yeah, no. Yeah, no. I mean, listen, it's bunched up, and look, yeah, they are 11 games over .500. They're not doomed. And listen, at any point, I think we're past. I mean, yeah, maybe the Yankees could be the turning point. I'm not opposed to that. I think that we're in a position with the Mets where you're looking for a turning point at any point. If they go sweep the Brewers, you're going to call it the turning point. If they beat the Yankees 2 out of 3 or sweep the Yankees, you'll call it the turning point. Like, whatever, they need a turning point. And at any moment, it's capable of being the turning point. If you want to go back to 1999 and with all the coaching firings and everything, yeah, okay. That was against the Yankees, absolutely. And then they went off. And maybe the Yankees will be. Maybe the idea that the how much it means to the fans and the spectacle that is the Subway Series, if they play well in that series and take 2 of 3 or beat the Yankees in all 3, that could be a turning point for them, but right now they would settle for beating anybody. They just lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates 30-4, and I understand what you're saying, that they went in and swept Philadelphia too. Okay, that's no excuse for getting your ass kicked by them, though. I get it, yeah. The Angels swept the Dodgers. I didn't hear a lot of the Angels swept the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. I didn't hear a lot of Yankee fans, and I'm not saying they should have, or that, you know, I didn't hear a lot of Yankee fans saying, oh, man, it's okay. This team's better than we think. They swept the Dodgers. Like, Pittsburgh stinks. And coming off of that win, with David Peterson on the mound Friday night, to have this series off of those 2 wins against Atlanta, that is a frustrating weekend. There's no other way to put it. A miserable week.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.